Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Thousands of Zimbabweans stage a peaceful march in Harare in remembrance of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara.
I say from now on, as we remember Itai's disappearance, all we are calling for is let's put a closure to Itai's case. Let's have the finality. Is he alive or is he dead?
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has assured the International Monetary Fund that Harare will reduce its public sector wage bill and improve fiscal discipline.
What is important when you look at the national budget, it must leave room for capital expenditure. So the situation where we have a wage bill of 83% being part of the total budget is not desirable.
And this comes at a time when the International Monetary Fund says economic difficulties have deepened in Zimbabwe.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Former Prime Minister and Movement for Democratic Change leader Morgan Tsvangirai joined the Dzamara family and thousands of politicians, civil society activists and ordinary Zimbabweans in commemorating a year after poor democracy activist Itai Dzamara of the Africa Unity Square was abducted by unknown assailants in Harare. Our reporter Ivan Chifera has more details.
The commemorations began late in the morning at Africa Unity Square in central Harare with family members, activists and politicians, most lawmakers from the Tsvangirai MDC formation, singing and dancing, calling for the state to find Dzamara. Shortly before the march began, Tsvangirai addressed the gathering and accused the ZANU-PF government of abducting citizens that had different opinions with the ruling elite. He said forced disappearances must stop immediately and government must account for all missing people like Itai Dzamara.
I say from now on, as we remember Itai's disappearance, all we are calling for is let's put a closure to Itai's case. Let's have the finality. Is he alive or is he dead? We just want to know the finality of it. And I'm sure for all of us, it is one thing that we will demand this government and they will hound this government forever and ever until they bring Itai to us, alive or dead.
He said it was disappointing that the government was now afraid of its citizens, hence its alleged abduction of those with different opinion.
Itai Dzamara's disappearance represents the unacceptable face of this regime, the unacceptable face of a government that just embarks on abducting people just because they have a different view.
Former ZANU-PF lawmaker and Youth Advocates for Reform and Democracy Director Themba Muliswa concurred with the Tsvangirai, adding that Zimbabweans must fight for their rights. Muliswa appealed to lawmakers to defend people's rights, noting that he only realized the importance of human rights when he was kicked out of the ruling party. Muliswa said his organization stood by the Dzamara family.
How many Zimbabweans believe in what we are doing for Dzamara? If you cannot be here today, are you then prepared to continue fighting?
Senate Human Rights Thematic Committee member Senator Meshack Marava said the Dzamara family should know that the nation was behind them.
They should just watch the job being done for them, and it's happening right now here in Zimbabwe.
Political activist Tendai Linet Mudewe said the commemorations were successful and such activities must be held regularly until Dzamara has been found.
We would want to urge our partners of Occupy Africa Unity Square, the organization, and the Dzamara Trust to keep on having this activity to put pressure on the government.
Family representative Patson Dzamara, who led the march together with Tsvangirai throughout the city to Retton Row and back to Africa Unity Square, said the family will not tire until his brother is brought back home. Tsvangirai joined the procession up to Angwa Street before breaking off to pursue other business at his offices. Itai Dzamara Trust Board Chairperson Bishop Anselmo Magaya called on the government to stop the suspected abduction of citizens and ensure that they are safe as required by the Constitution. Zamara, a former journalist and pro-democracy activist, was abducted by suspected state security agents, and up to now, there's been no trace of him. The High Court ordered the state to look for the missing activist and submit regular reports to relevant authorities. As the commemorations were taking place, ZANU-PF lawmakers were caucusing at the party headquarters. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo could not be reached for comment. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa recently told the National Assembly that his party and government were concerned about Zamara's disappearance, but the family says they hold them responsible for his abduction. Meanwhile, in a statement to mark 1 year of Zamara's disappearance, the United States Embassy in Harare said it remains deeply concerned about Zamara's whereabouts and well-being, noting that Zimbabwe should fully investigate cases of politically motivated violence and abductions to ensure that perpetrators are prosecuted and victims receive justice. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, in Parliament today, opposition lawmakers gave acting President Emmerson Mnangagwa a torrid time demanding to know what the government was doing to find the abducted political activist. Mnangagwa said the government will leave no stone unturned in its attempt to find Zamara. He urged anyone with information on his whereabouts to give it to the state. As victims of enforced disappearances and human rights defenders marked a year since the alleged abduction of human rights activist Itai Zamara, some victims blamed the state for abductions and said without holding past abductors accountable for their actions, disappearances of innocent Zimbabweans will continue. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa has more.
Speaking to Studio 7 at the launch of a Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights publication titled Enforced Disappearances, an Information Guide for Human Rights Defenders and CSOs, Konsilia Chinandravana, who was abducted during the 2008 elections in Mashonaland West Province after contesting as an MDC candidate, said failure by government to punish those who abduct innocent Zimbabweans shows that the state is complicit in the abductions.
This issue of forced disappearance, I think it has been an ongoing problem in Zimbabwe. Why? Because we don't follow the rule of law. We don't follow constitutionalism. If it was that, then people would be maybe afraid to carry it on because they would say, one day I'll be prosecuted in my own right, one day I'll have to answer for this.
Justina Mkoko, another victim, who says she never thought she would live to tell the story after being held incommunicado for 3 weeks concurred.
And when we look at our constitution, the new constitution now, and the constitution that applied then, it was the role of the state to protect its citizens. Where is the state now when we have this long list of people who are disappeared? I don't see their commitment in terms of ensuring that those people are brought to safety. And as a result, I don't think I can be blamed if I see them being complicit in all this. And if I take it from the way that they treated my case when the police were approached, they said they had no idea who had taken me. They professed ignorance of where I was, and they said that I was not in their custody. Rightfully so, I was not in their custody. It was later confirmed that I was in the custody of state security agents.
Mokoko was bundled into a vehicle at her home in Norton by state security agents. She was allegedly tortured while in detention. Some MDCT activists like Tondela Indira and Beta Chokururama were allegedly abducted and killed in 2008 by suspected state agents, and up to now, no one has been arrested in connection with abductions and subsequent killings. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights Senior Programs Manager Zimbabwe Chibwa told Studio 7 that from the cases of abductions that they have handled, the state, which is supposed to protect citizens, is suspected to be committing violations against its own people.
From the pattern that is there, it's quite clear for us. I mean, we worked on cases that include the cases of Justina Mukoko, the Cornelia Chinancha Wanzas, and many other cases. And it is quite clear, and if you look at some of the judgments that have come out, the end clearly is that of the state.
Chibwa said the publication seeks to minimize the risk of enforced disappearances and that even the state would use it to protect its own citizenry.
And what this book does is it articulates the international, regional and domestic guidelines on human rights protections against enforced disappearances. It also speaks to what should be done where cases of enforced disappearances have been done. So we hope that this publication will be used by government agencies, human rights lawyers and activists, and the ordinary citizens.
Zamara is among some local people who are still missing. Others are civil society workers, Paul Chizuz and Patrick Nabanyama, who was an election agent of former Education Minister David Coulthard. Senior officials in the Ministry of Information were not reachable for comment. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has assured the International Monetary Fund that Harare will reduce its public sector wage bill and improve fiscal discipline. But a leading economist says Harare and the IMF are focusing on the wrong issues. Chinamasa told a visiting IMF team in Harare today that the public sector wage bill will be slashed from 82% of government spending currently to 52% of expenditure by year 2019. The IMF team has been in the country since February 24th. The IMF's head of mission to Zimbabwe, Domenico Faniza, said Harare has met its targets. Harare has also set an ambitious plan to repay arrears amounting to $1.8 billion to international lenders by April this year. Senior economics lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe and a government consultant, Dr. Gift Mugano, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that focus must be on growing the economy, not just the wage bill.
When we look at the national budget, it must leave room for capital expenditure. So the situation where we have a wage bill of 83% being part of the total budget is not desirable. It then means you don't have capacity to fund capital expenditure like infrastructure, the roads, irrigation, the general construction. But what we need to take note of is that we have to reduce that expenditure from that high level to below 50%. Well, the minister has indicated that he's going to align 50%, which is good. But my concern is very clear, is that it's not about cutting the expenditure for Zimbabwe. It's about addressing the root causes of where we are. We should not bemoan the expenditure of 83% as a bigger problem. And I'm quite concerned that IMF is making a lot of noise about this issue without providing sound solutions which should be centered around productivity. You cannot make an argument over a budget of $4 billion, which is the size of a company in South Africa. We have no budget. So we need to have a budget. So what I see here, Blessing, is that if we raise our budget from $4 billion to $8 billion, the current budget for civil service would remain the same. It will align itself by 50% without cutting anything. So what I believe what is important to cut yes is access or the best workers, but where are they? If they are there, remove them.
But globally, how does Zimbabwe fare in terms of fiscal discipline?
The IMF is talking about fiscal discipline and surprise, because if you look at the global competitiveness report index, Zimbabwe is in top 20 in terms of fiscal discipline among all the countries. So what are they looking for? Are they looking for miracles?
That was a senior economics lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe and a government consultant, Dr. Gift Mugano, speaking there with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund says economic difficulties have deepened. In a statement to mark the end of a staff monitored program visit to the nation, the IMF said Zimbabwe cannot wait and needs to act now. It noted that the El Nino-induced drought has hit the economy hard, adding that lower commodity prices and the appreciation of the US dollar have compounded difficulties. The IMF said policy action is needed to reverse this trend. once the SMP is completed successfully as an initial step toward reform and re-engagement with the international partners, a comprehensive and ambitious economic transformation program is needed to revive the Zimbabwean economy and to cement support among international partners.
It also pointed out that the authorities have met all quantitative targets and structural benchmarks under the third and final review of the staff monitored program. Moreover, said the IMF, Zimbabwe has started to develop a medium-term economic transformation program in line with the broader reform agenda presented at the Lima meetings on arrears clearance in October 2015. As a result, it said, fiscal discipline is the key priority given the lack of resources. The authorities need to keep the cash primary accounts close to balance.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up
this evening in our Diaspora Forum, we are featuring a Zimbabwean living in New Zealand who's running a business.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
French authorities raided the French Football Federation's Paris headquarters yesterday to gather documents for an investigation against the former head of FIFA, Sepp Blatter.
The last batch of U.S. states do not hold their presidential primaries until early June, but the nominating contests are just about half over after Tuesday's events in Michigan, Mississippi, Idaho, and Hawaii. 23 of the 50 states have made their choice for the Republican nominee and 21 for the Democrats. An especially important group of five states hold their votes until next Tuesday, March 15th. The Republican winner that day in Florida gets all of its 99 delegates, while Ohio's winner gets all of its 66. And most of the 69 delegates in Illinois go to the victor there.
And police in Somalia say a car bomb exploded outside a tea shop near a police building in Mogadishu today, killing at least three officers.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
A former Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation staffer, Sipho Dube, has ventured into a courier business in Auckland, New Zealand, which plays a critical role in moving and receiving mail and other accessories in the British-owned island. Dube, who is among hundreds of Zimbabweans living in that nation, says he decided to venture into the business after completing university studies in business administration. His company, Kalima Investments, manages some contracts for King's Australia, specialists in local metropolitan agent on demand couriers and other services. Dube says it's amazing that some Zimbabwean communication experts are also in similar businesses in the country. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube in our Diaspora Forum today that courier services are New Zealand's lifeline.
Well, in Auckland, like all other concerned Zimbabweans, what we've done or what I've done personally as an individual is more of enhancing myself academically. There is so many New Zealanders and so many Zimbabweans to say we have got dual citizenship. We have come from Zimbabwe and the whole of Africa at large that have settled in this country, New Zealand. I am also one of those. And in pursuit of a brighter future and perhaps investment backward back in Zimbabwe, what we've done is enhancing ourselves as individuals academically. So I also enhanced myself academically in the studies of communication and journalism.
Now, tell us a bit about what you are doing, you know, in terms of business.
Like I said earlier on, the arena overseas is about investment. And I also went into that very same kind of area and sphere of investment after having done a master's in business administration at one of the universities in Auckland. And I decided to pick on communications in its widest perspective. So there is Australian companies that send items to New Zealand, and there is American companies and individuals that are sending items to New Zealand. So what I did is I opened a company that deals with accepting all those items or the selected contracts, and we redistribute them or deliver them around Auckland.
How viable is that company?
New Zealand as a developing country is a consumeristic environment or a consumeristic country, meaning there is very little production done here. The main trend in terms of business dealings is just consumption. So you'll find most business is mainly about just consumption as in stuff that has been manufactured away from New Zealand, just being brought into the country for distribution purposes. You find automobiles, for instance, as a distribution within the country is one of the biggest investments. The same kind of communications that I'm talking about is very big business. And also, again, in the communications sector, we've got a very huge number of Zimbabweans, mainly young guys who used to work for companies like the PTC, as in the telecommunications back home. They're all here digging trenches and stuff like that for the fiber optic. All that is still communications, and those are the major kind of businesses. The other type of business that is very, very viable in New Zealand is construction. The population of the country is below 5 million at the present moment, and construction in terms of building houses and stuff like that, you'll find mostly it's all about people from Africa, trades people from Africa coming to sort of like put New Zealand on the world map.
Now, finally, do you have any message for Zimbabweans?
Well, Zimbabwe is home, and like they say, home is best. We are in New Zealand, or perhaps we are in the diaspora, including those that are in Australia, those that are in the UK, those that are in wherever, including the USA. We are also concerned about the deteriorating state of the economy. Therefore, I'm also one of those who is seriously concerned about that. And the main activities that we are all involved in as young Zimbabweans or all Zimbabweans in the diaspora is investment back home, and also assisting our grandparents and relatives and also the whole community at large in terms of putting food on the table.
That was Sipho Dube, former ZBC broadcaster, speaking with Studio 7 from Auckland, New Zealand. For more details on this and other reports, please visit our website www.voazimbabwe.com. Tomorrow is International Kidney Day, and we'll be talking with stakeholders about this issue.
We are gathering, you know, at two sites in Harare, at Harare Hospital. There's going to be a group of renal staff, you know, and also at Chitungwiza Central Hospital, you know, there's going to be, you know, a dedication to the children. You know, we've got children who are coming who've got kidney diseases and some children who do not have, so that we make them aware, you know, of this condition, you know, that it also affects children. And this is as part of awareness and prevention.
Don't miss that story. Tune in tomorrow right here on Studio 7.
And in sports news, Zimbabwe beat Hong Kong by 14 runs yesterday in the opening match of the International Cricket Council World 2020 Group B match played in Nagpur, India. The Chevrons went into the match as underdogs, but opener Vusi Sibanda elevated the team's score by putting up 59 runs on the scoreboard from 46 balls. Elton Chigumbura also put up superb performance after hitting three sixes to help the Chevrons post 158 runs from 20 overs, leading to Hong Kong's loss at 144 runs. Sports analyst Grace Chirumanzu tells Studio 7 Zimbabwe's win was impressive but urged Zimbabwe cricket to invest in younger players.
It is really great news, especially for me, a woman supporting cricket on International Women's Day. It has been great news that Zimbabwe has won, and I'm really excited to see what's next for them in their group, and I'm hoping that they keep on winning to make it in the top 10.
From your observation, what can Zimbabwe do to improve on its performance? Because we saw that Vusi Sibanda set the test side on its way with 59 runs from 46 balls, and Elton Chigumbura hit three late sixes to help them post 158 for eight. What else can they do to progress to the next round?
I think Zimbabwe really needs to work on their batting, especially the top order. I have noticed that our top order has been struggling for a long time now. It has been crumbling, and we have been having dismissals that are really silly, like Hamilton Masaraja today. His dismissal was not justified for someone who's experienced in international cricket. So I think we need to have senior guys coming on to the party and proving that they've got experience at this level. Lead on young guys and try to really bat well and put runs into the bag and make sure that they set a target that is really far beyond reach for these underdogs.
And also, we've had a lot of calls for Zimbabwe cricket to initiate developmental cricket. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's really important that Zimbabwe cricket consider using junior players at such a big tournament.
That was sports analyst Grace Chirumanzu in Harare. Meanwhile, some sad news coming in from the Zimbabwe Football Association, which has confirmed that it has suspended some of its members and administrators in order to initiate investigations into match-fixing allegations. The association spokesperson Kolani Gwesela told Studio 7 that executive committee member Edzaika Sinawuyo and former national team coach Ian Goroa and others, including an Asian betting member, are some of the suspects fingered in the match-fixing scam. Gwesela says there is overwhelming evidence that there was match fixing within Zifa to throw some games in African championships. Efforts to get comment from some of those fingered in the scams were fruitless. But Zifa president Philip Chiyangwa was on national television today confirming the suspensions. Warriors fan Fabian Mahembe tells Studio 7 he's disappointed with the news of the scam after the ghost of the Asia Gate, which has just been laid to rest.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about human rights issues in Zimbabwe, as Zimbabweans remember Itai Dzamara was abducted by unknown assailants.
Yeah, man. The biggest man you did see today was once a little baby taken care by mama. Mama, love you to the max. Hear me loud now and clear. Sure. Yes, for real, loving you is the best thing to do. You clean my butt and the loo. There is no other that I place above you. How palatable the food you cook. Sometimes you gave me a stern look when you thought I was becoming a crook. I love you, mama, from my heart to my boot. Mama, you are black like soot, and this I love without a doubt. Trust me, mama, you are sweeter than food.
That's the music there of Black Rasta, Sweet Mother, dedicated to all the women on International Women's Day yesterday.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Thousands of Zimbabweans stage a peaceful march in Harare in remembrance of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara.
Unfortunately, that's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.